Many don't believe that either the trumpets with melodious noise or the infernal din await us where the road ends. But most, I fancy, have discovered that to be born is to be exposed to delights and miseries greater than imagination could have anticipated. That the choice of ways at any crossroads may be more important than we think, and that shortcuts may lead to very nasty places.
You are looking, huh?
Hello and welcome back to
the Pilgrims Podcast. I can do this.
Sudden stage fright.
Don't talk to me about stage fright.
You've only had 15 minutes to plan it.
Well, I was thinking about saying, live from sold out FedEx Stadium, welcome to this edition of the Pilgrims Podcast. Or then I started thinking, well, maybe I should do it since it's about Star Wars. I should say, coming to you live from a small outpost in the outer rim of the Zebulon Galaxy.
System. So definitely.
It's the Pilgrims Podcast, starring Hannah Long as the progeny, and I'm the patriarch, and my name is Al. Some people call me Al.
You used to call me Al. Yeah. Every time you say that, I'm going to... Anyway, and, we're also joined by Lisa Long as the matriarch.
Hello.
And Sarah Long as... What? We still haven't come up with you a catchy title.
Blondie.
You're going to have to speak up, though, because you're a little bit farther from the
microphone. The word, what do you call somebody who's like going to be a great person,
A person?
I don't think of it. We can move along. Move along, folks. Nothing to see here.
Anyway, just to underline the point that we, the Pilgrims Podcast, never keep our promises... Last week, the Patriarch was going on about how he was never going to see the new Star Wars until it came out on DVD.
I don't think I used the word never.
Well, until it came out on DVD, and that we kind of had to go dressed up and yada, 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 and he wasn't going to see it. He was boycotting it, and I can't remember exactly why. I think you didn't really state a reason either, but anyway.
Well, I just didn't want to get caught up in all the hoopla.
Anyway, this week, the Patriarch went to see Star Wars with
all
us.
All worn down.
Even, and I too feel somewhat of a hypocrite because I wrote a negative review of it and then I went to see it again. Even though I didn't particularly, it was not my idea, however I enjoyed it the second time. But we are going to be talking about that this hour on the Pilgrims Podcast. And I just want to start out by giving you a warning, there will be spoilers. We are going to be talking about...
No, they're not. We're going to spoil anything for anybody, are we?
Yeah. I mean, I've already written a...
That's not good. That's not good.
Well, this is a podcast talking about the movie. It's not going to convince you to see the movie. If you're going to see Star Wars, you're going to see Star Wars. I mean, everybody's going to go see Star Wars because it's Star Wars.
I didn't go see it.
Well, yes, but...
Then
yeah, you did go to see it, though, because it's Star Wars.
Just making sure you're paying attention there.
Yeah. Well, we did have to drag you, but you got there eventually. I mean, I think that there might be, like, three people out in the United States that haven't watched it yet, but they don't listen to our podcast.
They should.
Well, maybe we could hold off on the spoilers until maybe the last 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, we could do that.
But that's going to be hard.
Because I was listening to one of the Ricochet podcasts today, and they were talking about what a great thing Americans all came together and not... They didn't share any of the spoilers. And
that was...
Partially true. I mean, I didn't see it for what, a week and a half, 2 weeks? And I hadn't run across any spoilers. No one, I didn't run across any. It's amazing. And that's part of the reason I went to see it is because I didn't want to stumble across, the whole plot and then try to sit down and watch it. And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah, somebody said that they knew a guy that had come out of the movie theater and then yelled to all the people in line one of the major plot developments.
That was me said that?
No, it was somebody I know. They were talking about this guy that came out and ruined it for everybody in line.
Well, we all have our missions in life, Anna. Sometimes you got to do that.
Well,
those people probably needed to know that for one reason or another.
Yeah, he was a pastor, apparently. Said,
yeah.
Yeah, I bet those people are just going to be flocking to his church. Think, man, what a considerate person this guy is.
Oh, was it a preacher that did that?
It was a preacher, though. I think it might have only been like a youth pastor or something, but there you go.
Who lighted that?
Anyway, Star Wars. Do we want to kind of start out by being nostalgic and ask, and talking about when we first saw it or what? But
well, we already talked about that last time.
Did we?
I don't know.
Well, we talked about a different movie last time. So
I saw it at the Bristol Mall in its 21st week of showing. Right, so that's like almost half a year. From what I remember, it's been there for 21 weeks, which shows you something about, you know, what an impact it had on the culture in general back then, 1970s.
I saw my first Star Wars when I was probably 8 or 9-ish. I don't know, probably younger, because it was The Phantom Menace. I saw that one and I thought it was great.
Really?
Yeah, I don't remember much about my thoughts on it really. It's just that I thought, oh, this is cool. And then we watched.
You were a big Jar Jar Binks.
We watched Attack of the Clones. And
you wanted a Jar Jar Binks action doll. I remember that.
Yes. Yeah. That was no. and then. We watched Attack of the Clones, and then I said, well, I want to wait until the third movie comes out before I watch the others. And you're like, well, that could be a while. So we went ahead and watched Episode 4, 5, and 6. And I remember just the shock of, and here is a spoiler alert for Episode 5, when Darth Vader looks to Luke and says, I am your father. That kind of rocked my young world. I could not believe that, and I felt very betrayed.
I didn't tell you that beforehand?
You didn't. I was like, you know, 7, and I
wow.
I dogged you about it for days. I was like, why didn't Obi-Wan tell him? Why didn't this, you know what? Because I always remember what the answer you gave me eventually. You know, I've been badgering you about why all this plot development had come out, and, you know, you said, because George Lucas didn't realize he was going to make another movie.
Sounds like something I would say.
And so he concealed that. He was kind of retconning, you know, and Obi-Wan didn't say it because he didn't know it at the time, because George Lucas invented it for the next movie.
So I gave you a practical answer.
You did.
Well, that just sounds like just like I do.
And then you, like, criticized Mark Hamill's acting up and down. And
that sounds like what I do.
And also, and so I was no longer in love with Star Wars, and I had to kind of crawl off to Lord of the Rings for the rest of my childhood nostalgia.
But here we are, you know, and it made you a better discriminating personage of movie.
But then when I came back to it years later, I found you were wrong. So anyway,
wasn't wrong.
I mean, Mark Hamill is bad, but
why would he kiss his sister?
that was George Lucas's fault, I will admit. But
well, there you go.
It was probably like this really complicated and nuanced plan to add like an Oedipal complex.
And so they're sitting around the table writing out the script for, you know, the next Empire Strikes Back or whatever, and they say, well, you know, we could have Luke be his father and all this, and everybody looks at George and everybody's
father.
You know, Darth Vader be Luke's father.
Yeah.
And everybody's sitting there thinking the same thing. He kissed her. He kissed her, George. He kissed her. Yeah. But by then, you know, George could do no wrong, and nobody was going
to... Stand up to George.
Stand up to George. And so, you know, and if they had just done that, I mean, it's like, if they had just done that, then we could probably have averted the whole Jar Jar Binks thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to seem strange to a lot of people.
The white slavers over Disney.
The white slavers. It's like Hastings and Poirot. White slavers. Good heavens. Anyway, so, The Force Awakens. It's the first Star Wars we've had in 10 years. I think it was 10 years. When did Revenge of the Sith come out again? 2006? 2007?
I don't know.
Anyway,
since long enough for Hayden Christensen's career to completely tank.
Except he's doing Christian movies now, so there you go. So I'm gonna kind of give a summary of the plot of this movie. So if you were
and the poor kid that played Darth Vader, I mean
Hayden Christensen. Oh,
no,
you mean the little boy?
You know,
yeah.
It's just
Jake
tragedy.
Lloyd.
It's a tragedy.
Anyway, so the summary of The Force Awakens.
You don't care about him, do you?
Well, we have a lot to talk about.
Oh, we do?
Okay. We do have a lot to talk about. I normally write 10 questions, and I kind of wrote 15 today. So we've got lots to do. But anyway, The Force Awakens begins with by informing us, and here we go, spoilers, so just turn it off now. Luke Skywalker has disappeared. Right? And in his absence, the galaxy has dissolved into warfare, and the Force is imbalanced, yada, yada, yada. And there is...
Like Mitt Romney's disappeared, and now we're left with...
Scott Walker
disappeared. Donald Trump.
Yeah. Anyway,
Not that I, you know. Anyway.
So there's a map to his location, however, which this rebel pilot hides in a droid in the first scene of the movie, in which Max von Sydow kind of turns up very briefly and then gets killed off, which was just kind of...
What?
Poor Max von Sydow. Anyway, the old guy in the very first scene of the movie, he's a very august screen and film... screen actor.
I wondered who he was.
Yeah, I saw him in a movie called Through a Screen Darkly, which was, I think, in Danish, but it was an Ingmar Bergman film from the 60s. I mean, he's been in everything.
Yeah. Another
and he gets killed off in the first 5 minutes. So, poor guy. Anyway, maybe he had Alec Guinness's problem. He got tired of the dialogue and said, just kill me quickly. So anyway, this droid goes off onto a sandy planet where he is found by this orphan who is a scavenger, and her name is Rey. She rescues this...
What's her last name?
Well, we don't know yet. She rescues this droid. She spends her days scavenging from an old Star Destroyer.
I went to school with a girl named Anne Rey.
Anyway, and meanwhile, the rebel pilot who hid the droid's the plans away on this droid, he has been captured by the First Order, who are the successors to the Empire. They're like the neo-Nazis, and he's captured by this evil new villain named Kylo Ren, who seems like a kind of subpar version of Darth Vader. And he is, after that, rescued by a stormtrooper who has decided to go rogue. And they both end up on the sandy planet looking for the droid, and Poe and Rey team up and decide to take the droid to the Resistance. And that's really basically...
Poe?
Did I say... Finn and Rey. Finn is the rogue stormtrooper. So anyway, that's really all the plot details you need to know going in, but that's the story, and they, you know, they... Inevitably, you've seen the trailers, so they end up running into... some of the original cast members in various ways.
And in various states.
Even Alec Guinness once, you know.
Huh?
I'll tell you about that later. So, I want to start out with the title, The Force Awakens. And by the way, last week, another promise we made was that the Patriarch was going to write this episode. And I just want to point out, no, he didn't.
I did.
You started an episode, but...
I didn't have an opportunity to write it.
And how many questions have you written?
I wrote... Five questions?
Five?
Maybe.
Okay, anyway, I wrote
But that was before you switched to this movie. That's before I was going to do something else.
Yes, but it's been a week.
It would have been fun.
Or two. So
it was
anyway.
Huge.
Well, we'll do that some other time.
It would have been fantastic.
The Force Awakens. Here's the big question. Has the Force been asleep? Okay, now, seriously. The Force was the undergirding concept, spiritual concept of the original series. How does it play a part in the story, in this new story, and how is it characterized? Is it characterized differently from the originals? Has its mythology changed? In what way does it play a part in this story?
You're asking me?
I don't know.
It's
I guess so.
It's a central, you know, and if you go back to look at, well, you want me to tell you what I think about the movie first?
You can go ahead and do that. Go ahead.
Well, which is that this is episode 4 all over again. I mean, it's just uncanny how many, how...
It's not uncanny, it's just lazy, but go ahead.
It's not, well, okay, but it's, but that storyline is so strong and so good that, you know, it's fun. I mean, it does episode 4 better than episode 4, in my opinion. If you'd never seen any of the Star Wars movies, if you could, for the moment, just blot out that they're, which, you know, the first, or, you know, episodes 1 through 3, it's easy to blot those out, or you try to anyway, except in your darkest moments. But if you were able to kind of ignore the other, you know, all of them, and just see this one on its own merit, with one or two little tweaks, like, I don't know, maybe some casting differences, not much, but a little bit, it would be a fantastic movie. And The Force is part of that because just, you know, they get back to the original idea of it from, you know, from back in the day, which was this whole mysterious idea of you know, what it was. And we all kind of know what it is and what it isn't. And but they use it so well in this and develop it so well, much better than any of the other movies, in my opinion. You know, when she's kind of figuring out that she's got some of those spoiler, when she's figuring out that she's got, you know, kind of in tune to the Force, you know, like me. I mean, you know, let's all face it. Oh, hold on, I'm going to turn the light off from here on the couch. There we go. Okay.
Why don't you bring my smoothie in here from the refrigerator?
I don't know. I can open doors at the supermarket.
Now, I'm going to be the devil's advocate on this podcast here because, first of all, I enjoyed the movie much more the second time. However, I was quite disappointed in it the first time. And
I thought it was terrific.
Yes, and this is a really unusual change because normally I'm the one, like, you know, saying, oh, this is a great movie, and you're like, it was terrible, and you should feel terrible. So anyway, I'm going to be the evil one this week, but I'm going to say this. Look, The Force, I watched the original trilogy right before watching this movie, so I had them very fresh in my mind. I had a very clear idea of what they were. I did not watch the prequels. So I hadn't even thought about them for a long time. I haven't seen them in ages. So I think that a lot of people's reactions to this movie are based on the fact that this is so much better than the prequels. On so many objective levels, this is really a much better crafted film than the prequels. And that's true.
Yay!
However, it's not in the spirit of the originals. It does not feel consistent with them.
It feels better.
It feels different. Because
no, it doesn't.
It's really, really self-referential, for one thing. This movie, if you had never seen any of the original, then you know, 80% of the jokes are going to fall flat. Like, you know, when Han says, is there a trash compactor on this
floor?
Oh,
I know that, yeah.
Or,
I know. I know that, But like I heard somebody else say the other day, is that, you know, in episode 4, the only people that could act was Harrison Ford and Alec Guinness, and everybody else was just kind of like.
Carrie Fisher wasn't terrible, but
yeah, she made up for it in this movie, didn't she?
Yeah, poor Carrie Fisher.
Anyway.
She was rather underwhelming, but. Yeah, I mean, it's just that the differences, objectively speaking, this is obviously a movie with a better cast. These actors are much better. The new cast, I mean, how would you say the new cast compares to the old?
Better. I mean, compared to, that they are first rate. The girl that plays Rey and the guy that plays Finn. Finn.
Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac.
They were just terrific.
Do you think that there are any kind of obvious successors from a writing standpoint, like Rey is that sort of the Luke character?
Mm, oh, yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking that Poe would be the Han Solo character, but...
Sure. Well, no, Finn is.
No. I mean, because he's not Han Solo.
I know, he's Finn.
I know, but what I mean is, it's just like that anyway... I thought that they might have tried to kind of copy the dynamic of the original.
He's kind of funny, and he's kind of roguish.
He's not roguish.
Yeah, he is.
He really isn't.
Anyway.
I mean, she could kick his butt.
Well, yes, but he doesn't mean... I mean, rogues doesn't... Just because you're a rogue doesn't mean you can kick a girl's butt. I don't know.
But it does mean that you probably won't get your butt kicked by a girl.
I don't know. I'm tired.
What I mean
is... I'm in a weakened state.
Yeah, you use that excuse every time we do this. So, well, here's the thing about the Force, though. The Force, in this movie, they've removed all talk about the midichlorians.
Yay!
Thank goodness. But they have removed what made it almost religious in a way. There's no sense of... This could be a religion. And there's almost a conscious decision to kind of move towards something, I think, a little bit vaguer. They say the dark side and the light instead of, you know, Leia, for instance. And, you know, we're going to do spoilers, so we might as well go ahead. Leia says that there is still light in Kylo Ren instead of there is still good in him, like Luke used to say. And
much better. I like light and black. You know, and light and dark. And
light and dark.
That clear distinction. That's what you had in the first movie. In the, you know, we're not. By the way, for now we're just the prequels. We are, they don't exist in my mind. So, but if you go back to look at the first one, that came out in the '70s.
New Hope.
Well, it's very good versus evil.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. To say light versus dark instead of good versus evil is to muddy the waters.
No, it's not.
Because it's tapping into sort of a more Eastern spirituality type thing. Light feelings, dark feelings, whatever, you know. It was less defined.
They always called it the dark side.
I know, but they also defined one side as good and the other side as evil. Now, admittedly, there was a whole bunch of bunk about, you know, keeping the Force in balance and stuff, but... You stop making faces.
I don't agree.
Okay, well, and anyway, the Force's main purpose in this movie seems to be as a way to trick people and to mess with people's minds.
Well, but you only see the dark side in the movie.
Well, you see Rey using the Force.
You do eventually. Well, you see her awakening to it. As in the title of the movie.
Yeah, I mean it's just.
So she's figuring it out. She's learning.
Do you expect them in any further movies to refer to the Force as a religion? What I'm saying is that I think that the terminology
I don't think so.
The terminology of it has changed. I think, and I think that, and I don't think we ever saw mind control in the originals.
Sure, you did. These are not the droids you're looking for.
I mean, not mind control, being able to read minds with the Force, which is Kylo Ren's signature trick. So I think that they're changing the boundaries of the Force. It's something new. I think they could go good places with that. I'm just kind of curious to see whether that will hold the same spiritual power that it did in the first two movies. And I'm not sure that it will. I didn't get much of a vibe from it in this either. You know, the Force was something mystical. It's just that, you know, there wasn't as much debate about it. But anyway, So Star Wars has up until now.
What?
In like the first scene where the good guy shoots the shot and he stops it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they never had done that before.
Yeah, that was new
point,
too. When Kylo Ren stopped a blaster shot.
That was pretty cool. I mean,
he can freeze people.
It was a fun movie.
Yeah, they never did that either.
Star Wars has up until now been focused on the adventures specifically of the Skywalker family, Anakin and Luke. Even in the extended universe, the focus was always on the Solo twins or Luke's EU son, who I think was called Ben, but I didn't check. Is this movie trying...
As in Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes, guys. Is this movie trying something new or just going with the same family drama of the original, this time more predictable? Is Rey a Skywalker? What do you think?
I hope not.
What do you think, Mom?
I think it could be a very likely possibility.
Sarah?
No, I don't. I hope not.
I think she is, but I really hope not. I have a new hope that she might not be, but I suspect that that is the way they are going with this, which is kind of tedious, because it's going over the same territory over and over again.
I know.
You know, it's a really good step genetically for the Skywalkers, for Rey to be a Skywalker. I think that's a good thing. You know, she is a very cool character who seems very capable.
Genetically?
I'm just throwing that at Mark Hamill's acting abilities compared to Rey's. I think it's a big improvement.
I do think that the characters in the original, and this is something that I was going to talk about later, but I might as well get into it here. The original movies felt iconic in a way that this does not. This feels derivative in a way that they did not. And I know you're going to hate this, Patriarch, but it's like the original characters, even if they were sometimes poorly written, did feel iconic and kind of archetypal. You had the smuggler and the wise old mentor and the young man going off to save the princess. And all of those things felt very iconic and very very much in tune with sort of a mythology, with mythology itself. This movie does not. It is a mythology of a mythology. Its mythology is itself. All of its references...
There's no new ground to break.
Well, there could have been, but this just decides to retread old ground. It does it very well, but it feels like this movie can't be as iconic because it is it's so self-referential in post-modern.
Is that what you want? Do you think they set out to be iconic? No.
Yes. That's what the two originals were effortlessly.
Yeah, yes. but that was because it was Star Wars, and that's why it was such a big movie. I mean, you know.
Well, if this is movie is Star Wars too.
I don't know how you could have made it differently in that regard. Because they're always going to get compared back to the original.
Well, first of all, my problem isn't so much that it is different as compared to the originals, but it isn't in awe of the originals. I mean, this feels like a movie made by fans for fans, with lots and lots of fan service going on, you know, and and for me that means that I can't.
They should have made the Citizen Kane version of The Force Awakens, or the
love him or hate him,
To Kill a Mockingbird version of.
So the prequels, right? For all their flaws, and they had many, many, many flaws, they were never as in awe of the originals as this movie was. They were trying to break new ground poorly. Yes, I mean definitely, but
right.
But George Lucas was trying to do something new, and he was, and it felt like he was part of the same universe because of that. It wasn't trying to make a huge bunch of lazy callbacks to the original. Except maybe in the third movie.
Yeah, I completely disagree.
Now, that was perhaps its one saving grace. You know, now. And that's my biggest problem with this movie is that I can't say this is Han Solo here. This is a fan's idea of what Han Solo's story should be like. I mean that's what it feels like to me. Have you ever heard the word canon used?
Like a blaster cannon?
This was what I was afraid of. Canon as in the canon of the Bible, but for a story universe.
Letter K.
Pachelbel's canon.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I was just going to go ahead and voice that objection. This movie does not feel like canon to me. It is not a Star Wars movie. It is a very good Star Wars fan movie. It's going to be a very entertaining sequence of blockbusters. But Star Wars, as we know it, there will never be any series of movies like the originals from this point onward, unless the, you know, just George Lucas.
This was the best Star Wars movie of them all.
It could not be. It could not exist without the others. That's the problem.
I didn't say that. I'm just
saying. Well, you did say that. You said if you started with this movie.
I said, yeah, if you were to see this movie, you know, independently of not having seen any of the others, just on its own merit, it's pretty dang fantastic.
It's fun.
And that's what it's supposed to be.
I know it's supposed to be, but it's also...
You're overthinking this. It's like it's got to be, you know...
Look,
you do have to. You have to know what went on before.
Yeah,
you know, this
I know.
Movie builds on that.
The first two Star Wars movies were great works of pop art, okay? I mean, they were works of art in an operatic form. You know, they were fantasy movies. This movie was none of those things. It was not a piece of great art. It was a very good blockbuster. But there's a difference between those two things. Now, I can appreciate a good blockbuster. You know, I can. It's just that I was kind of sad to see that Star Wars proper, as a series of movies, which tried to be both really popular and kind of artistic at the same time, are over. So, anyway.
No, I don't agree.
Well, we...
Because, I mean, do you really think that George Lucas, when he made the first one, was setting out to be artistic?
Yeah, I mean, this is George Lucas we're talking about. He was, yeah, I do.
Okay.
I mean,
he's trying to tell a good story and weave some kind of funky stuff in there. And he came up with, they came up with two or three ideas that really resonated with people. And that's it. I mean, you know, if there weren't lightsabers in the original movies, which eventually you think about it, you can almost think about it that somebody eventually was going to have to come up with that idea. But maybe not, you know. But they came up with that idea. If you took those out of the movies, if you just took that one thing out of those movies, they become completely different. They become, in my opinion, not that they wouldn't have been successful, but that one little thing like that made it something really special. And there were three or four of those things like that. The other one was the dirty space, you know, because. Up to that point, you know, basically all anyone had ever seen was 2001 Space Odyssey, and it was, you know, these graphics.
Had Star Trek started yet?
No. Not on TV, but not on the big screen.
Yeah.
So, and so this whole idea of, you know, of spaceships being beaten up and dirty and kind of, and the whole thing with space being kind of grungy and worn out, and, you know, the Millennium Falcon won't jump into hyperspace because it's, you know, something's technically wrong. That was just a brilliant take on that, the whole idea. So three or four of those things fell into place, and that's what made that movie special.
You don't think it had anything to do with the plot?
Oh yeah, it did. But the plot is really nothing.
Original. I will admit that. Yes. And that's part of, because it draws from a very long tradition of of stories. I mean, George Lucas based it on the monomyth, which is, well, I'll explain that to you later. But
I'm uneducated.
No, I mean it's like I won't get into all of that.
The monomyth.
So,
is it like the Mothman?
I'll tell you what I thought watching the original trilogy over the before I saw this movie. I thought these first two movies feel homemade in a way. They feel like everything's kind of lovingly crafted, and This is a beat up old spaceship. This is going to be part of the movie. This is a sword. This is a lightsaber. Let's give him a sword that's a space sword.
Yes.
You know, and then oh, it's a space station. Everything felt new. All of these were new ideas.
Oh,
it wasn't
absolutely.
It wasn't glossy. It wasn't CGI.
Yep.
It felt very homemade. It felt like, and even Return of the Jedi to some extent, even though there were some really terrible writing decisions, which really derailed that movie. There was a lot of thought that went into that, and it felt low budget, and it felt somewhat intimate because of that, you know, and that's kind of what I'm getting at with the whole artistic thing. It's so anyway.
He didn't have the money to do. I mean, you see what happened when he had the money.
Well, yes.
You see what kind of movie he put together when he had the CGI.
But even so, he was building places and things that he was trying to do those things. This movie is recycled out of those parts.
This movie is the basics.
I know, but it's basics that it borrowed from the originals, which is lazy. It is kind of lazy.
It's what the fans wanted, and that's exactly what.
I know what it's what the fans wanted.
And to come up with something, and I'll admit that, you know, and I told you when we came out, one of the things I didn't like was blowing up the whatever the heck they call this battle
station.
Starkiller. Right. That was a mistake. Because they, you know, I mean, what are they going to do in the next movie? Blow up another one?
The plot points, the...
That was a mistake, but you take... You know, and yes, I can pick this movie apart on some of those... I've got milk duds. I could pick it apart on some of those aspects, but at the end of the day, the storytelling, the pacing, the acting, the cast, it was really well put together. And it's just a fun romp, and that's exactly what this movie's supposed to be.
Well, Well, I have said my piece on that, and I think we've probably come.
And you know, oh, I'm sorry. And you got that scene with Rey and Kylo Ren. Is that his name?
Yeah.
When he's trying to get this stuff out of her mind,
mm-hmm.
Was just fantastic. I would almost like to see that movie again just to see that scene. I really like it that way.
I think that a lot of the charm of this movie, a lot of the best things of this movie don't come from the writing so much as just the really good cast adding themselves to it. Like, for instance, Rey as a character is not tremendously well written. I mean, it's very basic. It's just this girl who lives on a planet somewhere. She's a scavenger. You know, she occasionally has a few. She just delivers these lines with so much emotion.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's a scene there at when she brings her little trinkets back from the you know, scavenging, and she's cleaning them up, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she's wiping them off, and she looks across the table at the old woman that's doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and it lasts for about 10 seconds. And that's all you need. She's looking across the table and she says, "That's where I'm going to be." You know,
I will admit that
60 years
the
from
10
now.
Minutes. That's my favorite 10 minutes of the movie. Is the 10 minutes spent establishing her little place in the world, and
outside of the scratches on the, you know, the piece of metal there. That's all. I mean, that, you know, you don't. That's all you need to know. It was really minimal, and you're talking about wanting something, you're doing something new. Someone else would have put a bunch of dialogue in there and tried to, you know, tell this whole different story and build up a whole different, you know, go in a
completely
different
direction. Well, one thing that J.J. Abrams knew he couldn't do was put in a lot of dialogue, lots of talking scenes, because he knew all the complaints about the prequels, so he really religiously avoided all of those things. I mean, he just, I have a feeling that there was like a blackboard in his office just like, no Jar Jar, no long talking scenes, no politics, and to some extent that works. And sometimes he's trying so hard to be unlike the prequels that it becomes a problem. Like, the politics of this movie are so complicated, or they're not so complicated. It's just that they're really vague, and you don't know where did the First Order come from. Who founded them? Who is this CGI villain that's played by Andy Serkis? That was one of my least favorite things too. No explanation for where he came from.
I know.
None of that stuff.
But that may have come later.
Well, I suspect that there might be some improvement there.
In The Empire Strikes Back, it didn't tell where the Emperor came from. He was only like in one scene.
Yeah, but you knew there was an Empire, and you didn't really need a huge explanation for where the Empire came from. So you knew there was going to be an Emperor. This movie has, I mean, because we didn't know anything that had happened before A New Hope at that point. In this movie, we know what happened before, so we want to know why the universe has changed to be the way it is, and we don't really get too much of that. And I think that this story that is being told in this particular movie could have had a lot more emotional impact, a lot more dramatic heft, if we had known some of those details. And that brings us to Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the choice to make to continue the whole family saga through Kylo Ren, the son of Han Solo and General Leia Organa?
I thought it was pretty good. I thought it worked well. And, I thought it worked well.
I wasn't sure about it. I mean, it's something that worked much better for me the second time. It felt like they were trying to kind of pigeon it trying to shove in a little bit of the extended universe mythology without going all the way. But I wish we could have seen more of that because, frankly, I mean, Han Solo is one of the... Oh, yeah. The more dialogue, even a flashback or something. But I wish that there had been more scenes between Han Solo and Kylo Ren than about, 10 lines of dialogue before... Spoiler alert.
Whose real name is Ben.
Whose real name is Ben. And why would Han Solo name him Ben anyway? He knew him for like 5 minutes. But,
what?
He only knew Ben for, like, 5 minutes.
Kenobi.
So, anyway, that didn't make sense. And Leia didn't know him at all. I guess it was Luke.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're our only hope.
Oh, I guess that's true. But
there you go.
She never met him.
Boom!
She never met him.
Well, apparently she did.
At least she didn't.
No, he'd been a hermit on on Tatooine all those years.
At least she didn't name him Luke.
That's true. That would be a little bit awkward. Yeah, Han Solo would be a little jealous. Lando. part of me was, these are the great iconic characters of the 20th century, Han Solo, and his son is Kylo Ren, who's kind of this wimp. And this whiny, he's a whiny... He's a
creepy guy.
He's like, I needed to turn to the dark side, but I've got feelings about it.
He's a whiny guy who wants to be a creepy guy.
I know, and it's like, this guy is not the son of Han Solo. He's a second rate Darth Vader.
That's what he's supposed to be.
I know that's what he's supposed to be. I don't think he should supposed to be like...
What would you like instead?
Let me tell you. So, if you're going to have the son of Han Solo, it's going to have to be somebody who's cool, like
Han
Solo.
Yeah, but you got to have a bad guy.
I know. A cool bad guy. Somebody who you can be scared of and who doesn't look like he spends $50 on conditioner.
He was a scary guy. He was a scary guy.
He was... scary until he took his mask off and started complaining about his feelings. And
when the scene where
who he reminded me of? He was like a version of Hayden Christensen's Anakin Solo who could act better.
No way.
He was whiny.
No way.
And self-centered.
No way.
Well, yes, he was. He was whiny and self-centered.
No way. And the scene where he unloads with his lightsaber on the console, right?
Yeah,
that
just like a teenage boy
was exactly, but no, it was rage. It was, and that's what
he can't control his emotions.
Well, that's what they do. That's what the Sith are all about, right?
Yep. But then he lets General Hux talk back to him, and he doesn't do anything about it.
Well, so did
with Tarkin.
Tarkin to Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
And
yeah, but. Tarkin was cool.
Ripper.
Domhnall Gleeson in this obviously learned his public speaking lessons from Hitler, and he's kind of a goose steps around, and he's a Lucian guy. The guy that's the red haired guy.
Now he was a good character.
But
there's this power struggle between the two of them, you know, he's probably about 3 foot tall, but you know they made him 20 foot tall in the hologram, right?
Mm-hmm.
And snorkel.
Snork.
Is that it?
Snoke, as in Snoke. As in Snoke gets in your eyes.
And so, that's no Snoke.
Yes, Snoke and mirrors.
So there's this power struggle between those two young guys trying to be the second in command.
Well, I can see that, you know, but it would be much scarier if the guy that he was having a power struggle with was also scary. And General Hux is not scary.
He is.
He's not scary.
He is scary.
I
want
to know.
Okay, show of hands. Who thought Kylo Ren was scary? Okay.
We win the room. I got two votes.
Oh, you've got two votes. That's
I'm the patriarch.
Oh, come on. Well, I think he was...
I think I have two votes because I'm the matriarch.
Well, it's a tie then. I thought that he was not as scary as Darth Vader. But though it's hard to take Darth Vader seriously anymore because of he's been in the culture so much.
Exactly.
And I
will grant you that, but again, if you...
As space Nazis go...
If you saw it for the first time, it would be a different story. You're comparing him to Darth Vader.
The friend with whom I went to see the movie the first time had never seen a Star Wars movie before, right?
Here we go, yep.
So I was immediately trying to think about it from her point of view. I had her reactions on the spot.
Yeah.
I don't think she thought he was particularly scary.
Did you ask her?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it. She did not seem to... The vibe I was getting... And he had his scary moments, but it was just like, this guy is trying to be Darth Vader, except he's a wimpy moment.
I don't think he was supposed to be. If you want somebody to be scary, it's very hard to make a scary figure in a movie like that. It's just hard to do. Now, if you want to add suspense, then yeah, it can be very scary. But just for them to be on the screen... And you look at the guy and you think, man, that's a scary guy. I don't know of anybody that can do that.
You know, I think what would have made him scarier, and in just a few ideas, and I think that, I don't...
I thought they did
I do think, I think he's okay. It's just, I think that they should have used silence more. So you don't know what he's thinking. You don't know what's behind the mask.
That's maybe.
I think that would have been cooler. Because he a part of me was just sitting there thinking, are we going to do Darth Vader again? This is so lazy. Why, you know, this is not creative. And I can see, you know, and it makes sense from a character point of view later on because he's trying to be Darth Vader. It's not just a lazy callback. It's not just them trying to kind of capture the Darth Vader magic.
He's got a couple little dents on his helmet. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
It's really cool. Because, you know, it makes you think, okay, I wonder how I got those dents on his helmet.
You know what I think?
What do you think?
I think they should have used Bradley Headstone.
The whole idea of a scary scary Nazi guy like this is that he doesn't have a face.
From our mutual
What's
friend.
Behind the mask? And they've done that with Darth Vader once, so it doesn't quite have the scariness as before. And also, they removed the mask quite early, quite quickly. So that was that. You know, once they'd removed the mask, then it became a different ballgame. He was not just the villain anymore. He was suddenly a person with whom had a lot of struggles, and you had to deal with all of that really quickly. So,
what's the guy's name from Batman? Is it William Dafoe?
Willem Dafoe.
The guy that was in the mask.
Well, it wasn't Batman. It was. You mean Liam Neeson?
No, the guy, the green.
You're getting your Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. That's right. I thought he was scarier without the mask.
Yes, well, Willem Dafoe does have a scary face.
Yes.
I'm just saying,
it is possible, you know, I just didn't feel like this guy was scary without
the
mask.
Well, he was so immature, and that's, you know, it's just hard to take a villain seriously who is so immature. Now, I think he's a good character, and I think he's interesting, because, and I think
But he's not the guy in charge.
And the guy who, that's true. And the guy who is in charge, and the guy who is in charge is not scary either. That's the problem. I wouldn't have a problem if Kylo Ren wasn't scary, if Snoke had been scary. But Snoke was a joke. I didn't mean to... Anyway, because... And that was... J.J. Abrams has said a lot about how he's not going to use CGI in these movies and how it's going to be all practical effects and homemade and stuff. I didn't see any of that in this movie. And...
What?
This movie did not feel... I mean, it was there was so much of a CGI sheen over the whole thing. So it, you know,
much less than those others that shall be unnamed. But there was a little bit of that, too much. But I agree with you about Mr. Snow.
So anyway, that in the next movie, I hope that I hope they remedy that. Well, you can admit there are problems, and then you hope they fix them. So anyway.
Well, the thing about A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back, the thing that was so great about them, like, when the X-Wings are coming down the Death Star, all that's models, and that's what makes it so special. And this movie, I enjoyed it tons more the second time. The second time, I'll give it 5 stars, definitely, but it all seemed CGI a little bit.
It did seem, I mean,
but some of it was still great.
It feels kind of fake. I mean, the thing about CGI is that it has a way of taking you out of the story and taking you out of the danger of it, because if you see crazy things happen with CGI and characters survive incredible things, then you start to stop thinking of them as in physical danger, and you start to kind of remove yourself from the story, and you don't get that same sense of physical menace anymore. That was a problem in The Hobbit. It wasn't so much a problem in this, but I think it was a problem.
The chase with the Falcon.
It was awesome, but it
was... That was pretty awesome. And it was...
It was a little bit much, but it was cool.
I remember when that was over, just kind of going, wow.
Yeah, you know, I was sitting next to you.
That was a lot of fun.
You're like, that was amazing.
That was amazing. You know, and
I enjoyed that, too.
Because that could have been... I know some people that have seen this in an IMAX. Mm-hmm. I would almost... be willing to drive somewhere to see this on an IMAX. We're taking contributions. If anybody wants to send us some tickets to an IMAX theater somewhere.
Speaking of its action sequences, I think that this movie's action sequences were not as deliberately or as well choreographed as in the originals either. In some ways, I mean, they didn't have as much, or even the prequels, because I liked the action sequences in the prequels. Some of them.
Were they fighting all those droids?
The droids were a bad idea, but Anakin versus Obi-Wan on Mustafar, I mean, it was all over the top type kung fu stuff sometimes, but it was a very stylized sense of fighting that they really made a lot of out of the lightsaber sequences. That was cool. You know, things were falling over and them chasing each other. There was definitely a fight going on here.
You know, that would have been funny if they'd been running around there with their lightsabers, if they'd run by Sam and the Frodo there.
Throw it in the fire! Somebody needs to do a YouTube video there.
Yeah.
There you go. But this movie, even the lightsaber battles, I thought that the lightsaber battles had a different feel to them. They were more
real.
Violent.
They were horrific.
Well, it's like the difference between a sword fight in The Princess Bride and a sword fight in Braveheart. And, you know, that's somewhat of an extreme example, but Braveheart, it's like you can take your sword and take the hilt and punch a guy with it, right? This felt like a movie where that could happen. Yeah. In The Princess Bride, they wouldn't do that because it was a very stylized, very chivalrous, very old-fashioned Hollywood.
And that's why the guys in Braveheart would kick the butts of the people in The Princess Bride.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is they're stylistically inconsistent. And I prefer Errol Flynn in this case.
He wasn't in either one of those.
I think you're kind of missing the point. So anyway, what did you think of the fighting? How did you think it was choreographed? Did you think that it was easy to follow? So on.
Yes, it was. It was very good because let's think back. I'm going. Okay, the early movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do a whole lot of lightsaber fighting, because I think it was because, you know, the Darth Vader character, the guy was in a mask and he couldn't, you know, do a lot of stuff. And they didn't have CGI and all that good stuff, right? So those had their limitations. They didn't they didn't do a whole lot there. Then they went, when they got into the CGI side of things, it went completely crazy with some of the, you know, with Yoda fighting and all. It was just,
that was insane.
It was just bizarre, you know. And so this had, you know, I mean, they're fighting out there in the snow, and it was just, it had a much more guttural feel to it, and a much more realistic.
That's true. And I think that it kind of echoes the Darth Vader-Luke duel in Return of the Jedi. Before that, the lightsaber fights had been kind of more light, but this one was much grittier, because immediately... Yeah. Luke and Darth Vader in that one are obviously both very angry, very very much trying to kill each other, and that's a little bit different here too. You can't quite, because the emotions side of it was something that was really important in how that Luke and Vader fought, because Luke could defeat Vader by giving into his anger, and by giving into his anger, that was how he was supposed to turn to the dark side. I'm trying to think of how Rey managed to kind of channel her emotions into her fighting. Because of course that's how kind of the Force works and stuff. But
she had, you know, she had to defend herself all those years using, you know, her rod.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Know, that was kind of established there early on when she, you know, beat those other guys up.
Yeah.
Using her
staff. Kylo is obviously pulling his anger in and trying to do that. She did seem like she was doing it from a sense of almost inner peace, which was a neat touch.
It was for survival.
Yes, but
she's a survival.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was
all about survival.
But it was not from a sense of revenge.
No,
which was nice, because I mean they could easily have done that, and that would have been against kind of the whole spirit of Star Wars. I like they didn't do that.
The moments where the movie, you know, The Force Awakens, the moments in her her acting, where that comes about was just first rate. I mean, it was again like that's the same scene in the where they're trying to get the mind thing out of her.
I love the whole sequence in the snow.
Sequence in the snow when
I thought both times I watched the movie, I really loved that.
Yeah. Let's go see it again tonight. Is there any more playing tonight?
Even though at the same time I was thinking the whole Starkiller idea was really stupid.
It was. It was goofy. It was just like, you know,
anyway.
Well, let's do a lightning round of last questions. Favorite character?
You talking to me?
Who else am I going
Ray
to?
Ray.
All right, Mom.
Definitely Ray.
Sarah?
Finn, probably.
Poe. Actually, BB-8. BB-8 is my favorite. I think BB-8 should win that Oscar.
My second favorite was Han.
Harrison Ford was good. That's another. We didn't mention the original cast members. How do you think they handled them, you know? And I think that Princess Leia, that was more Carrie Fisher's fault than anything, but I wasn't a huge fan of the way that they kind of made her a passive observer and everything. She had like 5 minutes there looking worried.
They could almost have written her out of the story.
She was barely there, you know.
Yeah,
and
they could have probably written her out and it without too much difficulty.
C-3PO was the only one that felt like his old self, but...
I don't know about that, because I thought that Han had a lot of his old charm. He still was very charming.
Yeah, I just think that he should have shot Kylo on that bridge. Just
well,
walked up
that,
and... shot him.
That part was just not well written.
Han shoots
That's
first.
Not his fault. He was playing what, you know, the writer
there should be no,
gave him.
There should be no universe, no galaxy in which Han Solo says, "Come home, we miss you," as a way to try and talk a young man out of...
Did he say that?
Yes.
"Come home, we miss you?"
Out of his genocidal maniac.
"We miss you." Mania. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh,
that whole scene didn't work.
It did. I thought it worked pretty well.
I think it would have been a great, great, terribly dramatic operatic scene in the spirit of the originals if Han Solo had to try to kill his son to save the galaxy. That would have been cool. I mean, I could see Luke trying to talk his son out of it. Luke's that type of peacenik, but...
I guess I almost feel like if they were going to allow Han to be killed, that there should have been more of a struggle, you know? In a way, it was kind of a cheap death because...
Somebody described it as a chump death. You know, they said a chump dies in every movie. He deserved better.
Because
he knew when he walked out onto that bridge that he was going to die. He had to know. I didn't know.
I think he knew that was definitely a possibility. And I found myself as I went along, you know, and Kylo Ren, he was acting like he was going to come home with Han, and I thought, this is too easy, you know.
I didn't.
It's too easy.
The patriarch was just rolling with it.
Psychological powers that we women do.
I was rolling with it.
It's our womanly intuition.
I was rolling with it.
Yeah, the patriarch was just so bought in. He was just kind of sitting over there,
really
pushing his toy lightsaber to his chest.
It evoked. Is that right? It evoked the closest thing to the original that I'd ever seen in my from me personally. Even more than the Empire Strikes Back and all that good stuff. For a moment there, I felt like I was almost, 16 years old and seeing it for the first, seeing these for the first time.
Well, that's great. That would, I don't mean to be patronizing. I mean, really, you very rarely very rarely enter into a movie with that amount of
interest. Yeah, I bought in.
All,
I bought in. And when they, they're running across the desert there and I think you said this too, but they're running across the desert and
we're gonna take this one,
it's nice and fast, it gets blown up. We'll take this junker. And they pull the
camera around
the camera around and there it is and it's like, wow.
Got a chill. It's the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, I mean that was just and it was so well done.
I remember because I looked at my friend Samantha and I'm like, it's the Millennium Falcon, and you have to do it, and she's like, what?
No doubt, yeah.
And I'm like, it's you don't understand. I think that might have been almost the greatest moment for me because we've seen Harrison Ford in movies, and we've seen, not Carrie Fisher, but Carrie Fisher didn't really evoke any.
You see, that would have been cool at the end if Luke had come across with his little land spear. Up there on that mountaintop.
Sarah says that she thinks that they should, the last scene in which they see Luke, has he been standing on that cliff all this time dramatically? She says he ought to have been like mowing the lawn or something with his lightsaber.
Sarah, what did you think about the death scene, Han Solo and his son?
I thought it was fine, I guess.
This movie, we're pretty much done now, but this movie reminded me of a Joss Whedon movie. They were trying to make a Joss Whedon movie, and Joss Whedon was trying to... Wait a minute. He made Firefly, right? He made the Avengers. That particular type of banter felt very much like Joss Whedon. It wasn't quite as well written as his usually is, because his usually leads to character type stuff. But it felt like, from a tone point of view, it felt like it was in the Whedonverse instead of the Star Wars universe. Now, the trappings were different, of course, but even the way they handled death scenes, Joss Whedon has a tendency to kill off characters very unceremoniously, with no particular point to their death. These are quite pointless deaths, and Han Solo's death within this story felt rather pointless. It was moving, of course. It felt like a sucker punch for me. I was like, oh, there goes my childhood. But it's not in the tradition of kind of like the old stories of saying that people's deaths mean something. I've got kind of a blog post there working up, but I've never liked that about Joss Whedon stuff, and I felt like it kind of bled in here, and that bothered me a little bit.
Not me. It was a great thing to do.
This just should have killed Han Solo off in Return of the Jedi.
We need to watch Serenity. I haven't watched Serenity with you guys yet. But anyway, we need to finish up, and the Patriarch may or may not be writing our next episode. You never know with us. So, anyway, we are going to wrap it up now, and If you want, you can find us online at our Twitter location or our Facebook location, or write us an email at thepilgrimspodcast@gmail.com, even though I don't really check the email anymore. Basically, just leave a comment at the blog.
So do you have anything coming out in the Weekly Standard this week?
No, not this week.
New York Times or...
No, I'm going to be writing for Summit again this week, I guess. But anyway.
It's kind of a big deal.
In the coming days, may the Force be with you.
All the money that e'er I had, I spent it in good company. And all the harm I've ever done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass, good night and joy be to you all. Sorry for my ghost.